Mini episode 715 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by The Unheard Scene, your home for great music interviews of all stripes. Follow them on the web at unheardscene.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode number 715 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris. We are very privileged to have back on the show for our third conversation a legend of rock music, Steve Smith, one of the greatest drummers of all time. We first had him on the show episode number 31. This is when we were doing full-length episodes back on June 28, 2008. Subsequently, mini episode number 466, September of 2014. Very happy to be able to get him back on today. As I said, one of the very greatest of all time, and that is by any number of different standards out there. A modern drummer. Magazine readers, they had voted him the number one all-around drummer 5 years in a row. Modern Drummer named him one of the top 25 drummers of all time, and he was voted into their Hall of Fame in 2002. Because, again, there are very few people that have done what he has done at high levels in both the rock and the jazz worlds. And something that we have mentioned the two times on the show previously, and this was sort of just a background note, what he's been best known for through the course of his career is being the drummer during the most epic, legendary stage of Journey. And, of course, that's just the tip of the iceberg with the man's career. But as big as Journey is in pop culture, to have been the guy riding the skins for that, that's going to be obviously the thing that first comes to mind, as well as everything else that he's done. This time, that's not so much a background part of our conversation. That's part of the present, because he is getting back together with them for some tour dates. It has worked out scheduling-wise. We're going to talk a little bit about that, about how fortunately it's been able to fit into his schedule and their schedule to be able to reunite on this basis. Additionally, his book, Pathways of Motion, Hand Technique for the Drum Set Using Four Versions of Matched Grip, is out. We're very happy to have a copy of that with the DVD that comes with it, by the way. If you are studying drums, if you want to learn more about the world of drums, then who better to learn from than one of the maestros out there? This is basically your PhD course in the drums, if you will, if you have this book. So it's a true pleasure to be able to bring him back on the program. As I say, one of the great music legends that we've ever featured on the show, the one and only Steve Smith. Steve, welcome back to the show today, sir. Thank you for fitting us into your schedule. How are you today?
Okay, Rick, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on again. Pleasure to be here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. And I have to say, your last book that we were talking about when you were on, that great book, Roots of Rock Drumming, which, of course, had its own additional segment that came with it, the additional interviews that people could listen to. I have to say, I gave that to my nephew Fletcher, who is learning the drums and who is getting to be, I think, very good at that. I will tell you what, I've done some cool things with the course of this show, and that is not a kid that's easy to impress, I'll tell you that. And his face just lit up when he got the book and when he delved into it, whatever. So for a kid that's not easy to impress, the chance to learn from you and what you had done with that book, talking to the great legends, I'm sure he would enjoy this one every bit as much. But I can tell you firsthand how much people who are into the drums love your stuff.
Well, that's great. Good to hear that. I mean, that book that you're talking about is that's called Roots of Rock Drumming, and I went around the USA and then over to England interviewing drummers that were really the archetypes of rock drumming going back to the early, mid, and late 50s and even early 60s. And so that was a really interesting project to find out how they approached the work, what they were thinking of, what kind of drummers they were to begin with, and then they got to tell their story in this book. So that's a pretty interesting collection of interviews. And then, like you said, there's a DVD with that, and you get to see these guys and hear them tell their story as well. So I find that to be a really interesting part of that project.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, from a music historical perspective, it's really wonderful. From the perspective of somebody learning the drums like my nephew, a really great way to kind of learn from these guys, I would say, in more of a big picture sense. What you're doing here with this book, Pathways of Motion, Hand Technique for the Drum Set Using Four Versions of Matched Grip, it's a very granular kind of a thing here as far as really kind of getting in the weeds. And if you're learning the drums, really kind of getting into the specifics of how to approach it. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Having done a book from more of a general perspective on theories of drumming, now you've got one here that's into the very, very specifics on how to get better.
Yeah, the newest, that's right, the one, Pathways of Motion, the newest book on Hudson Music just came out a couple of weeks ago. This is, the focus is developing hand technique so you have a fluid, relaxed way of playing the drum set. And I focused on matched grip because it's something that I've been working on seriously for about 4 years. I grew up playing jazz from a young age, so I grew up with what they called a traditional grip. It's like the old jazz and drum corps type marching band grip. And recently, in addition to that, I've been working on the match grip myself, and in that process made a lot of discoveries. So basically, I'm putting those out there for other people to work with. Because one of the things that I find, and especially young players, they're very enthusiastic to want to learn how to play the drum set. So they get a drum set, and they start playing right away with the bass drum, hi-hat, snare drum, and, you know, toms and the whole kit. And so they get acclimated to playing beats, but they don't usually put in the time to develop finesseful hand technique, because that takes focus work on a snare drum and or a practice pad where you just work on that hand technique. But the result of that is then it's much easier to play the drum set, and your longevity will be improved because hopefully you'll iron out and smooth out like potential bad habits and then develop good technical habits. So your playing has a better sound, better feel, and you avoid injury with that. So that was more typical for my generation. I grew up in the 60s, and a lot of focus was still put on learning good hand technique and then playing the drum set. And so I felt there was a need for this for some of those folks. And the other side of it is there's a lot of drummers that come up in drum corps, and they have good hand technique for drum corps, but it's not necessarily adaptable to the drum set, which requires a more fluid, relaxed style. So there's a lot of people that I feel could get some help from this approach. And I use these ideas myself and have been sort of, let's say, educating and teaching myself over the last few years. And with Hudson Music, they asked me if I'd document this for the book DVD, which I was glad to do, and here it is.
It's a very valuable resource, absolutely, for anybody that's learning the drums, trying to get better at it, no matter how long they've been playing. I myself do not have any background or expertise in that. Back in the day when I was playing an instrument, it was the T-bone, so this is kind of like apples and oranges to me, but I was still perusing it and finding a lot of great stuff in here. There's one thing in particular I wanted to ask you about on page 71 here, because this is something you hear about sometimes with different instruments, maybe not so much motion, but with other instruments, but you're talking about motion between the notes and what happens to set up between one note and the next, and basically the movements through the air. Talk about that a little bit, please, because I think that's a thing that people would find interesting no matter what instrument they've played.
Well, with the drums, we only hear one side of the motion. We hear the impact of the tip of the stick onto a drum head or onto a cymbal. But in between that, the stick comes back, your hand, wrist, elbow, arm, you know, your whole arm moves away so it can come back down again. And so much of what the book is about is what happens in between those impacts. And if I can draw an analogy to a couple other percussion instruments, like if you can imagine a shaker or a tambourine, in order for those instruments to work, the full stroke of the note is really important, the motion between those notes, because you hear two sides of it. You hear the downstroke of the shaker and the backstroke of the, you know, left to the right of the tambourine. So the entire motion is crucial to be in time and have a nice rhythmic feel. With the drumstick, it really is the same, though most of the time people don't think about it that way because you only really hear one side of it. So once I had that realization, I really spent a lot of time with those pathways of motion, making sure that the entire motion that I'm making with the stick and therefore then analyzed to the fingers, wrist, forearm, elbow, you know, to the shoulder, that all of those motions are very fluid and smooth and everything's in time.
In terms of those motions specifically, what I'd like to ask you about is in terms of visualizing them, I did get a couple of pretty cool texts with pictures here from our guest booker, Steve Servillo, who had seen you with these colored lighted drumsticks. And I wanted to ask you about that. They're very cool pictures. Am I correct that this is connected to some of the art that you have been creating through drumming?
No, it's all connected to the art. And that wasn't really instructional. I had a showing. Well, it's going on right now in New York City, an art show with my drum art. So for people interested in seeing that, you go to stevesmithdrumart.com. And I created a series of, let's say, I don't know exactly what to call them. They're pieces of art on canvas using lighted drumsticks in a dark room with time-lapse photography. So I was able to create some very interesting images when you shoot pictures of the drumsticks going through space, moving through space. And then when you photograph that with, let's say, approximately a 15-second exposure, it creates some very interesting imagery. And then we put that on canvas, and it creates some pretty cool art. So there's a showing at an art gallery in New York City called Art on A Gallery, and it opened 4 weeks ago, and 2 days, and Thursday night will be a closing. And I'll be there Thursday night from 8 to 10 at Art on A Gallery in the East Village. And I'll be there to demonstrate again how I created that art. So I bring a little kit in there and the lighted sticks, and they turn off the lights, and I do a demonstration of what we did to create the art.
That's incredible. Now, my logical follow-up to that would be, when you're creating that kind of art, are you taking just any kind of musical pattern that you would normally otherwise use, or are you sort of crafting something specifically for this so that your motions look even cooler on canvas?
You're completely right, because when they asked me, there's a company called Scene 4 that came up with the idea, and they asked me, would you be interested in doing this? And I said, absolutely, because Vic Firth made these lighted sticks, and they came out, you know, 6 years ago or something like that. And ever since I got those, I enjoyed practicing with them. And I'll practice with them at the end of the day and turn the lights out and sit in front of a mirror and practice and watch the shapes. And again, it's like part of this pathways of motion concept. If this my shapes that I'm making in between the notes is nice and smooth, usually it sounds nice and smooth. So anyway, I was so used to making those motions, and I had a good idea of how to do the art with the lighted sticks, where some drummers that have done this, or other drummers like Carl Palmer and Bill Ward and Dave Weckl have done some of this drum art before, and maybe they haven't used the light sticks. I went in there with a lot of ideas of what I wanted, and just like you said, I specifically did special motions, like played press rolls on the snare drum and let's put the camera directly above the snare drum so you can see what those side-to-side motions look like and various things like that. So I was able to create some very interesting art.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's incredible to be able to kind of take that kind of expertise and be able to translate it to how you think it's going to look visually. That is really, really incredible. And I have to ask you, too, for somebody who's had the longevity that you have in the business, I have to ask the question. One of my all-time favorite drummers from my all-time favorite group, Neil Peart from Rush, having chronic tendonitis here that is going to force him to retire as a regular playing drummer, of course, which is kind of a sad thing, not going to be able to tour that much, if at all, anymore. So I'd like to ask you about that because I've never come across anything with you having any kind of health issues, injuries. So I don't know if I'm missing anything or if you've been fortunate in that regard or if there's a certain kind of training that goes into it to kind of help avoid this kind of stuff. It was something I'd never really thought about before, but there's so much repetitive motion that you've been doing over a period of time. Of course, I can see where that could take a toll. So what has been the story for you with that?
Well, first of all, it is really sad about Neil, and I actually got really sad when I read his interview where he talked about retiring and the issues that he's had. And I can understand it more in his case, and you know, and it's a little different in my case because he has been playing in Rush for his whole career, and they're a pretty powerful rock band, and he has a style where he plays very hard. So I could see why and how that could happen with him. In my situation, I definitely have had some injuries, but for the most part, I've been able to rehabilitate myself from those and adjust my technique. Because then during, you know, when I found myself having certain injuries, I could figure out what I was doing wrong that was causing those. And some of it is wear and tear. But, for instance, like with my traditional grip, where you hold the stick, you know, with the left thumb, essentially, to the hand, I was having some problems there with one of my joints. Just the cartilage was wearing out. So that's what led me to play more match grip, you know, back to the pathways of motion. So I found that rehabilitated that problem for me because with the match grip, it's like a little – it's less wear and tear on your hands. So I, when I play a gig, it's something like 75 to 80% match grip. And I still, you know, then I can play match grip, I mean, traditional grip for 25% of the show, and there's no pain. So that was what my solution to that issue. I've had some rotator cuff tears, not 100% tear, but pretty serious tear. But with yoga and physical therapy, I've worked my way through that, plus adjusting my technique, lowering my cymbals, and just staying really mindful of my touch and sound. And so I don't have any kind of major technical, physical type problems, but I think a lot of it in my case is because I've spent so much time refining my technique and staying within the boundaries of not pushing myself to play louder than necessary. Like I've found that there's an impact level where I hit the drums where I have a dynamic range from soft, medium to loud, and I stay within that dynamic range no matter what group I'm playing with. And you know, people are asking me now, well, now that you're with Journey, you're going to be playing like really loud and with fat sticks and different heads and all this stuff. And the answer is no. I play exactly the same way that I play with my own band. Really, the only difference is there are more louder tunes than soft tunes, you know, so that will require, you know, some control and conditioning that because there will be more bigger sounding louder tunes, but it doesn't make me play louder than I play already, whether I'm touring with my own band or somebody else's band. So, and that keeps me from having those injuries because I keep control of the sound and playing with a good balance and, you know, with not over smashing cymbals and hitting and breaking sticks. And, you know, I haven't broken a stick in probably 15 to 20 years. So keeping that control improves my sound. So the sound man's really happy and the onstage volume is not that loud. So there's no need for, you know, plexiglass aquarium around the drum set or anything like that. And so it, you know, so I can just have a nice stage volume where it's musical. And that's really, you know, been my focus is this musical drumming that feels really good and then has a great overall sound and then allow the microphones to amplify that through the PA system.
It's interesting because we've talked about these types of issues and variety before, but not in a physical health sense. So this is kind of an interesting extra dimension to it. And you're absolutely right about the contrast with Neil Peart, because I think about the multiple times I've seen him do the drum solo in YYZ, and that alone, you multiply it by a couple of thousand, and yeah, you can see where the wear and tear comes from. But I wonder in your case, because again, we've talked about this every time you've been on, as far as the vast kind of diversity that you've had in your career, from being with Journey to, as you said, a lot of prog and jazz drumming, to picking up Indian style drumming and working with the different musical cultures around the world. The fact that you're mixing it up way more than he is that something, am I reading you right, that that's something that kind of protects you too, because you're probably using different types of motions and not doing the same thing physically all the time?
Something like that. But the main thing is that for the most part, most of the music I've been playing for the last 30 years takes place mm-hmm. in a dynamic range from extremely soft to moderately loud, with
yes.
occasional loud. So I haven't had to play hard, you know, really hard. I just play for a good sound. But a lot of the times I'm playing in clubs, you know, I'm playing mm-hmm. in small theaters, and I'm playing with acoustic musicians. So it requires
yes.
me to have a lot of control about the overall volume. If I'm playing with an acoustic bass or an acoustic piano player or even a saxophone player, trumpet player, I can't be bashing the drum because it'll obliterate their sound and piss them off and not sound like music. But if you're in a band where everyone's electrified and you're the only acoustic instrument, the drums are the only acoustic instrument, the bass player and the guitar player and even, let's say, electric keyboard player can turn the volume up to the point where they can drown out the drummer, so the drummer may feel compelled to play loud. And when you're in the situation of playing stadiums all the time, you could get in the habit of playing loud all the time, though it's not always necessary. But anyway, you could get into that habit. So my situation, I've been in mostly living in a world where my dynamic range, from pianissimo to mezzo forte to forte, very little double forte. So with Journey, we have a pretty large dynamic range, and I am, in fact, reacclimating the band to playing with more of a dynamic range the way we used to, but maybe even more exaggerated than the way we used to. And I'll save the big, you know, the big sounds and the tunes that need it, and then and play in a range where it sounds good, feels good, and it's musical.
Well, very good anticipation there, because I was just about to ask about that next. From the research that I had done before our conversation here, it seemed to touch upon more or less just a matter of scheduling, that it finally seemed to work out for you with all your other projects, that you had the time to do this and that it worked out with them scheduling-wise. Is that the predominant thing with getting back together for this Journey tour and joining them at this point?
It's part of it. It's part of it. Mm-hmm. In the past, when they've asked me to play, there's, you know, it's never much warning. It's like, oh, we'd like you to come out, you know, today or in a week or something like that. And my schedule is generally booked at least a year in advance. And also, I've been so satisfied musically with my own career, my own projects, and playing as a sideman with a lot of great jazz musicians, I haven't been inclined to want to play being in one band, Journey or otherwise, you know, just being in one band playing a set repertoire, you know, year in and year out. That hasn't been anything that's interests me. But in this case, they asked me last June if I would come out and play. And I said, no, but how about next June? You know, like, let's plan a year in advance. And so they said, okay, let's talk about that. So, in fact, that's what happened. And so we were able to plan in advance. And I played out all the gigs that I had last year and then scheduled in the Journey tour, which they had an idea of, they were going to tour from April to the beginning of September. And then I just blocked that in my schedule and I booked around that. And that's something that feels good to me. I can do that because I have, you know, I have great gigs before that tour and some really great gigs after that tour with the rest of the year. And that feels like I need a complete musical diet to really feel satisfied. A lot of different projects, and I'll be doing everything from playing with Steps Ahead to a John Coltrane tribute at Birdland this September, to playing gigs with a big band. In a couple weeks, I'm going to Europe to play with the WDR Big Band, a week-long schedule of playing with them and making a DVD and a recording. So I was able to schedule all these events in, which made it workable. So they asked me if I would commit to a two-year touring cycle, which I said yes. So that means, you know, we're going to do this five-month tour journey. We'll do a five-month tour from essentially from April through early September. And then next year we'll do some international touring and probably some more U.S. touring at that point.
Well, what you say about having a variety of musical styles and needing that to feel satisfied, I mean, that's something that, again, as a creative person, I can relate to. I like to participate in a lot of different types of creative projects. I'm sure there's a lot of people that can relate to that as well. At the same time, given that you're getting back together with this group, you were the drummer during what we all associate as the glory days of Journey, and it's just so epic in American pop culture. I'm just wondering if you can describe what it makes you feel inside getting back together with these guys and getting a chance to relive some of those days and play that music that really captivated the world. That has to just be an indescribable feeling for you.
It's been really interesting. We've already rehearsed for 4 days, which will be the totality of our rehearsal for the tour, but it seemed like that's all, you know, the band doesn't need to rehearse the tunes. They already know the music, and I haven't played the music for 32 years, really, even though we did a Trial by Fire, you know, that record in 96. I haven't played any of the classic tunes since about 1984. So I actually didn't even really remember much of what I played on those records, and so I put myself through pretty serious training as far as writing down and relearning all those tunes, which was interesting to see, okay, this is what I came up with 30 years ago, and I liked it. It seemed like I made some good decisions back then in my 20s, and so I relearned what I played, but played it in a new way. Even though I'm playing the same parts, I play the way that I play now, which I have a lot better technique and control, and I think the feel is a lot better, and the dynamics are better, so I brought that into the rehearsal room, and that was fun. And I think, like, one of the things that Ross said to me, Ross Valerie, the bass player, is that now, like, the parts that he plays that are from the record, they fit hand in glove with the parts that I play. So, you know, I'm playing, and I'm, in a way, hitting reset, meaning I'm playing the parts that I played on the record, but I'm starting with that as like my set point. Let's go right back to not even what we did live, but let's just take it right back to the records and hit reset. And let's, because these songs sound great on the record. There's no reason to overachieve, no reason to do anything other than play essentially what we played on the record. And then let's go from there. Let's see what develops from there. But not to pick it up like where they left off after the last, you know, 20 years or so of touring, but to go back to the beginning. And that's feeling really good, and it's pretty interesting for me, and I think hopefully good for everybody else in the group as well. They're all, you know, we're all feeling like it's sounding musical and feeling really good. So we did play one gig already, and it was a corporate show in Las Vegas, which was a nice way to start, a little bit under the radar, and the group felt really great, and Arnell just really blew me away. He sounded amazing, sang great, and we had a fun experience. But then the next show that we do is next Wednesday night, actually, and it's at Madison Square Garden. So talk about a trial by fire. We'll be on a double bill with Santana, and you know, it feels like the pressure is on. But anyway, we'll go from there. But it'll be an interesting experience, to say the least.
Wow! So part of the city coming out as far as the new Vital Information NYC tunes on there. Of course, obviously the Journey tour going on, Pathways of Motion, Hand Techniques for the Drum Set using four versions of Matt's Grip, this outstanding book. Again, you're one of the very busiest guys that we have ever featured on the show. Always got a lot going
there's,
on. But
one
I
more,
somehow
not,
feel...
Let me mention one more project.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to miss anything.
14 track of drum solo pieces. And that's called Fabric of Rhythm, and that goes with my art collection. So the folks from Scene 4 are going to put together a coffee table book that will feature my pieces of art, and I played a drum solo, one for each piece. And that will be included on an LP vinyl record in with this coffee table book. So that also is going to come out this summer.
Absolutely, and yeah, I was selling it short too, I guess, by forgetting a second ago here, of course, the art show as well. So yeah, so many different projects going on right now. Is this a particularly busy time for you? I mean, you seem busy always when we're catching up with you. You've always got a lot of balls in the air. I mean, this would seem like it's a significantly more busy period of time, but I don't know what the standard is.
No, it's a little more busy. I mean, definitely I've had very dense and busy years, but this year it's just because of the journey towards amplified things a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And also it gave me a deadline for some of these projects because I had it in mind to do the new Vital Information album and this solo record. But with the Journey tour coming up, it gave me a deadline. I better get this done now or I'm going to have to wait until the fall. So, you know, so I put myself in overdrive to get all these projects done.
That kind of focuses the mind when you know you have to do something like that and something as big as, again, obviously, a major tour with Journey, which, again, is going to be just amazing to be able to check out, and seeing you back with them is certainly going to be a treat for all of your fans. So, again, it's been a pleasure to talk about that with you and your new book, your art collection, your other projects that you have going on. As I say, again, just such a wonderful all-around type of musical career that you have going on, and I know that there's going to be so much coming yet in the future because, as you said, you're always restless in these areas, always looking for new things to do and to try. And it's fascinating to keep up with what you've got going on, Steve, but we look forward to chronicling it in the future. Thank you so much
Great.
For taking time
right,
to be with
you.
Us
thank
today
you.
For the
thank
third
you.
Time.
Sure, thank
I really
you.
Appreciate
thank you
it.
Very much for the support. You take care.
Well, we're big fans of yours here, as you know, Steve. So, again, just a pleasure to be able to get to check out anything that you've got going on and talk to you and get your perspective about it. So, I really appreciate it. I can't thank you enough for your time, Steve. And thank you, everybody, today for tuning in to FDH Lounge, the episode number 715.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classics, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.